listening to Rock Talk with Blair Packham and Bob Reed on News Talk 1010 CFRB.
Okay, one thing that I'm sure I made clear when I took this gig on was there would be no math.
That's right. It was a necessity for me that there would be no math. Shall I tell you my sad history with mathematics?
Is it a short story?
It's a short story, okay. Yeah. It's very short. It started falling apart in grade 10. By grade 11, I had to do math three times in order to pass with a 52. And then I went to grade 12 and had to go to summer school for it. So I did grade 12 math twice and passed with a 52. And then my parents relented and didn't make me do grade 13 math. Now, I don't know where all that happened or why all that happened, but it did. And I have a sorry relationship with mathematics. I thought until I read Jason Brown's book, which is called Our Days Are Numbered. And it talks about the relationship between our everyday lives and mathematics, including music, which is why he's going to join us
now
here on
suddenly
Rock Talk.
It makes sense,
yes,
on our program.
All of a sudden,
indeed.
There is math on our program, and it's a good thing.
And it is. And Jason Brown is on our program. He is with us in the studio. And this is really fascinating stuff, especially for guys like us. I'm as equally frightened of numbers as Blair is, but I'm a musician as well. And I realized after I was well down the path of learning music how math and numbers all fit into it and how they're all tied up and all related.
Well, they aren't all tied up and related. You know, I like to tell people that musicians use more mathematics when they play than accountants use mathematics when they do their work. It's just inherent in every aspect of music, from the sine waves that are produced when people sing and when you play your instruments, to the rhythms that you play, to the aesthetics of music, what sounds good. And whether you do mathematics consciously or, like most musicians, you do it subconsciously, the mathematics is there. And the mathematics is what helps us love music.
Now, you're sitting across the table with your arms around a beautiful guitar. And so you're not just a professor of mathematics. You're also a musician yourself. Which came first, chicken, egg, math, guitar?
It was pretty close. I'd been forced to take piano lessons when I was younger, and it was the best decision that my parents made, because I heard the Beatles' Red album, and that was it for piano, and I used to teach myself guitar 8 hours a day, just taking things off the record. And at the same time, I'd always been good at math, and they sort of ran parallel courses, and I played professionally while I was at university in bars and did some TV and records and songwriting, and then it came to a junction point where I had to decide, I guess, what was the safest gig. And so I went into mathematics and became a professor. But I've kept my music up over the years, and various things that I've read in mathematics talks about the physics and the mathematics of music. And I read certain things in the early 90s about something called a Fourier transform, which all sound is made up of essentially sine waves, which is the sign that you would have learned back in high school.
The one that drove me crazy.
They drove you crazy, yeah. And unfortunately, your teachers never told you how ubiquitous those kind of curves are. Every musical tone that you play, say, on a guitar, is made up not only of fundamental notes, which are all pure tones are sine curves with different frequencies. So when you play a note, you have a fundamental, which is the original frequency, but you also get harmonics that are played. So I'd read about Fourier transforms, which is the mathematics that says if you have a complicated sound that you're listening to, how can you decompose it into its original frequencies? And then in 2004, I heard that it was the 40th anniversary of A Hard Day's Night, and it brought to mind the question that I had, and I think most guitarists had, was how did George Harrison on Earth play that opening chord?
Yes.
And you see in various books all kinds of different transcriptions. You might have seen one that looks something like this, a bar chord at the third fret. You play that, and I don't think it sounds quite right. Another one that they have is close to that, and it sounds like this. Yeah. Sounds closer.
A little closer, yeah.
And in other places, they even have other instruments playing. They'd have Paul McCartney playing a bass note, and they'd have John Lennon playing a chord. And so I wanted to sit down and think about the problem of whether you could decide what was the right chord. How did they play it? And you couldn't rely on your ears, because our ears often hear notes that aren't played. And so what I did was I took a segment of that opening chord and I digitized it, took it off the CD, and I ran it through this Fourier transform, and it decomposed it into frequencies. And to my disappointment, there were about 30,000 frequencies in that opening chord.
In that single chord.
Because you get harmonics,
yes.
You get the original fundamentals, you get everything else that rattles in the room.
Yes.
So what I had to do was make deductions, but what I could also tell was something called the amplitude.
Right.
So you can read that out from the Fourier transform. So I could look at it and then start to deductions about what were the likely the fundamentals from all that. Once I did that, I started to deduce what notes George Harrison would have played, and I was stuck because the notes that I deduced weren't playable on his Rickenbacker 12-string. At that point, I was almost ready to give up, but one night it came to me as an epiphany that I had a hidden assumption.
Did the epiphany come in a dream of a man on a flaming pie, or was
no,
that no?
I know that story.
No.
There was no flaming pie.
Wasn't part of it.
And the assumption that you read all over the place is that George Harrison played the opening chord on his Rickenbacker 12-string. I don't think there's any doubt that he played it on his 12-string, but maybe it wasn't just George playing on it. So once I realized I had a hidden assumption that it was just George Harrison playing the opening chord, I opened that up and said, well, what else could be playing on the chord, and can I still apportion the notes to the players? And it was very clear that one of the notes was a loud D at a certain frequency, and I could tell that must be played on the bass. Because if you play something on the guitar, you strum the guitar, there wouldn't be a big differential in terms of the loudnesses of the different strings.
True.
So if there's one string very loud, it's likely the bass. And then I still had problems, and I had three frequencies, the same frequency almost, of an F. And I couldn't fit that into what I figured out that George Harrison likely played. And I thought about it, and then I thought, well, what about a piano? A piano typically has three strings under every note. And so that could account for that F note. But I know pianos are strung differently at different points. At the bottom, it's one string. In the middle section, it's two strings. In the top section, it's three strings. So I ran down to my local music store, and it must have looked crazy to the owners. I stick my head inside the grand pianos looking where it broke. And luckily, the F, under that F key, there were three strings. And in fact, it does change at certain kinds of grand pianos. So it actually, I deduced mathematically that it was a mid-size grand piano in Abbey Road studio that George Martin, who played the piano in the song, played that chord on.
Wow.
And what is interesting, I think, as well, is that George Martin did not play the same thing that George Harrison played. They're completely different chords, and he added in that extra F note that was unplayable on guitar, and you can see mathematically that he mixed the piano almost perfectly with the 12-string guitar, and that's why you can't pick it out easily. But putting in that F note among some of the other notes completely hid the chord from
right.
all guitars, because everyone's trying to play exactly the notes that they hear. On top of that, all the chords that in the transcriptions that I've played and all the ones I've seen start with a low G on the E string. And I went to the mathematics. It's not there. So we're all hearing that G, because our ears hear chords, but it's not there.
And it's a phantom note.
Wow.
It's a phantom note, and there are phantom notes, so you can't go just by what you hear.
Yeah.
If you want to, you actually need to look at the mathematics.
What an unbelievable tale of mathematical deduction. So at the end of the day, it's George Harrison on his 12-string.
Right.
McCartney with a bass note.
Right.
George Martin with a piano note.
Piano chord.
Chord. Am I missing anything?
There is an extra note that could be a harmonic, but I apportioned to John Lennon playing.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
So that's
that's amazing.
So there's a lot you can do with the mathematics. And later on in the song, I looked at the solo that George Harrison did. It's a beautiful solo, I think. Very well crafted, very fast.
Something like that?
That's something like that?
Yeah.
Exactly. And I had the feeling that it was too perfect. I had a feeling they must have cut the tape speed down in half and played it down the octave. Though I didn't, you know, you can't just say that unless you have proof. And when I looked at the mathematics again, I could deduce that, in fact, they had to have slowed down the tape speed in half, and he recorded it at half speed. And then they cranked it up to full speed. It comes up an octave, and it sounds as it does.
Well, this has been a fascinating discussion. Really interesting stuff. And the book goes beyond music. It goes beyond music.
Yeah,
many different ways.
I just want to say this, that my experience of the book has made me want to rediscover mathematics, and you know, despite my lengthy disclaimer at the beginning of this portion of the show, really, Jason, it's got me interested in this stuff again, and I think if it does that for me, it probably will do that for other people too.
Well, that's great, and you know, I think from my own songwriting that I think a little bit of math can just open you up to new ideas. And as a songwriter, I think that's what you're always looking for. The Holy Grail is that new idea.
The idea, I agree.
And you can pursue it however you like, and sometimes it may work out and sometimes it might not. But if you have a new idea, that opens up all kind of doors to you.
I agree.
Well, it was a great idea having Jason Brown drop by and to go through some of this stuff with us. Thank you so much. It's just terrific. The book, again, is called Our Days Are Numbered, How Mathematics Orders Our Lives. Jason Brown, thanks again.
Thank you.